It's the 25th of April, and we're going to continue stocks. And I'm not sure how much we're going to do. We might decide we want to move on to mutual funds today. I'm not sure it'll be up to you, but you'll be kind of quiet and look at me like that. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But we're going to decide whether or not we want to have exam number four or not. Because we missed a day, my apologies, I was sick, and that throws the whole darn thing off. So we'll decide if we want to roll it into the final. So remind me we'll discuss that before we leave. But today we're going to continue with stocks and take a look at why they're exciting and what, be careful, why we should be careful. And maybe we'll start mutual funds today. I don't know. But first, we need a good joke. Anybody got a good joke? Good joke? Anybody got a good joke? Anybody got a bad? I got plenty of bad jokes. Did you hear about the two cows that were out in the field? Yeah, it's a bright, sunny afternoon, beautiful. They're chewing the cud, talking to one another. And the one says, you know, I was artificially inseminated this morning. The other one says, ah, I don't believe that. First one says, it's true, no bull. You like that? It's a bad sign when you start licking my boots. For chapter 12? Yeah, that's what I do with them. The next one over there? What did I do with them? Here they are. Chapter 12. Here they are. Okay. We discussed some of chapter 12, and what we did is... I got the wrong one. That's 123. We bounced around. So let's go back and take a look at a few things that we glossed over. We bounced around in chapter 12, so we'll do a few things that we glossed over, going to be on the exam, but they're important. And so we said that stocks represent ownership, and we saw how if we take a long-term time horizon, we could do well. We said, what are the risks of stocks? Well, there's a lot of them. The market is a whole business failure, global liquidity. That's not usually a problem. Liquidity is a problem with real estate, as we'll see later on. But now risk. How do you deal with risk? Well, there's several different ways of doing it, but the two, in my humble opinion, that are important with regard to what we as investors have to do is emphasizing large companies that have been around for a long time. We saw how well Procter & Gamble had done and Coca-Cola. As long as you choose these companies. Now, if you go with a real high-flying, a Netflix or a Titter or Bitter, Twitter, thank you. You know, you might do well, but you might wind up with a go broke. Have you heard of go broke? I'm sorry. GoPro, right. You heard of GoPro? Have you heard of GoPro? Everybody's going to have a GoPro on their helmet or something. You want to see what happened to GoPro? I'm going to show you what happened to GoPro. I'm going to show you. We go to Yahoo. Where's Yahoo? There it is. And we go back to Yahoo front end. And it's go broke. No, GoPro. GoPro. Ah, there it is, GPro. And I had a student who was gung-ho on this thing, and I kept saying, you know, I don't know. Yeah. It went public around $40, then shot up to 80, and then down to 40, and then, back up to 60, and then $6. You understand? The high flyers often are the ones that fall. Is that going to happen to Procter & Gamble or ExxonMobil? No. I mean, every once in a while, one of these old companies that have been around forever falls apart. But the most important thing to do is just to take a long-term perspective. Don't panic. Realize that if the world does end, it doesn't matter where your money is. And there are many scams out there, folks. If anything sounds too good to be true, right. Have you heard of penny stocks? There are people say, oh, yeah, you make a lot of money in penny stocks. No. You are at a disadvantage from the beginning, even when you think you can beat these people. Because after we explain it, especially in the 123 class, and some people go, well, you know, what if I... Because what happens? What do? They pump and dump these things. Did you see the Wolf of Wall Street? That was classic pump and dump. He and this group were selling companies that are basically worthless. Maybe there's a little bit of worth to them, but for the most part, they're worthless. And they would just raise the price and raise the price and raise the price, and then they disappear, the people who are selling the stock. All the suckers are left holding the bag. So you think, well, I can outsmart them at their own game. Wrong. You can't. It is an old saying. If you're at the poker table and you don't know who the patsy is, who's the patsy? You are. Because as soon as you buy that thing, now if you try to sell it, they're going to, oh, sure, we sold it to you for 7 cents. We'll buy it back at 5 cents or 6 cents. It doesn't sound like a lot. It's a couple of pennies. It's a huge percentage. It's called the spread. So stay away. Stay away. And people get crazy. They just think, oh, man, you know, stocks are going up. Quick, run down there. They're giving away free money. The last time this happened, as a whole, was in the late 1990s. Now, some people say we're in a bubble, in a mania now. I don't think so. Some stocks are way overpriced. Remember the PEs from Tuesday? Have you ever heard of Netflix? Yeah? Let's take a look. And I happen to know that it's NFLX. But you could just start typing Netflix, and they think, oh, yeah, you want Netflix. What's the P.E.? Holy mackerel, right? Holy mackerel. You see? So some of these stocks definitely are bubble territory, in my humble opinion. But not all of them. As we saw, some of them weren't that bad. Have you ever heard of Amazon? Amazon? But now, what's going on? Why are investors so enamored with these companies? Because they're growing. They're growing, and they're taking over the world, right? Amazon's going to take over the world. This year, they call them brick and mortar, stores, more storefronts have closed this year so far than all of 2018. So Amazon's starting to really hurt other people. How about Facebook? Is Facebook that? It's done really well today, by the way, up 6%. Is Facebook that high? I don't think. Not for a company that's grown 2.1 billion subscribers. I don't have one. I don't like them. How about Twitter. Twitter. I know the symbol for that. It's not that high. So I don't think it's as bad as it was in the late 1990s. Doesn't mean I'm right. We'll see. Doesn't mean I'm right. And what you hear people say is, oh, it's different this time. It's a new era. Wrong. Eventually, things go bad. I know you guys don't like to read, but there are really good books out there. And I'm going to get you to read one of them before the end of the semester. This was written in the 1840s. But it still shocks us. Because it doesn't say why. We don't know why. I mean, we can conjecture. But humans are not rational. Humans are completely irrational when it comes to certain things. And I had a student say it really well. He said, you know, it's easier to fool a million people or 300 million people than it is to fool one person. And this shows you the Crusades, witch trials, the various financial peccadilloes in the 1600s, 1700s. But the one that's most interesting is the tulip bulbs. Have you heard of tulip bulbs? You've heard of tulip bulbs, right? Tulips. They grow. There was a time in the Netherlands when tulips were traded like stocks. And tulips, yeah. So check it out. Check it out. Hard to believe, but that's what happened. Okay, so forget stocks. I mean, forget taxes. Yeah, don't worry. One of the things that eventually, this is business 123 stuff, when you actually start buying stocks. There are the full-service brokers, Merrill Stench, Morgan Stupid. They used to want you to have $50,000. Now they want you to have $500,000 so they can rape you. I mean, so they can charge you for their services. So many, many, especially young people, like the deep discount brokers. Have you heard of Robinhood? Some of you already probably use it, right? It's free. No, it's not. They say it's free. The commissions are free, but they're charging another way, which we learned about 123. But some of you, if you take 123, might
decide, hey, I want some low-cost options. So we'll, you don't worry about it in this class. Okay, forget this. Okay, now, finally, okay.
We took a look at a few different stocks. Let's now quickly go through the major categories, because I'm going to ask you on the exam. But more importantly, you're going to be the financial guru for your friends and family. Is that cool? Yeah, it's a very serious responsibility. So when you hear Aunt, you know, Tia, Maria, or whoever, say, ah, those stocks are all the same, they're all crooks. Wrong. That's not true. Companies fit into various categories. Some don't fit nicely into categories. Others fit in more than one category. And not all stocks are the same. Have you heard of blue chip companies? Blue chip, have you heard of those? Those are the biggest companies. Those are the companies that have been around for decades. They attract conservative investors. Now, we're not talking about politics. We're talking about people who want to invest in stocks but are afraid, you know, because they know that stocks can fall. So is General Electric a blue chip anymore? They're on the skids. They're going to break up. Don't worry, they're not going to disappear. But they're going to break it up. They're going to do something with it. But how about AT&T? Is that a blue chip? Coca-Cola? But now we have blue chips like Google and Apple and Facebook. And the old guard, the McDonald's of the world, they go, that's only been around 10, 15 years. But they're bigger. Facebook is now bigger than AT&T. And then, well, I think it's bigger than Coke, yeah. Where does the term blue chip come from? Bit of trivia? You might want to at a bar. Gambling. Because over 100 years ago, the only people who owned stock were gentlemen. The hoi polloi, the huddled masses, they didn't own stocks. Gentlemen owned stocks. And gentlemen gambled. It's what a gentleman did. So at the gambling tables, the blue chips were the most expensive chips. Came from gambling. Anybody go to Vegas? They're not, the blue chips aren't the most expensive ones anymore. No. Which ones are?
Hundred,
and now what are the most expensive ones? Like purple or something?
Purple's
500, and are any higher than that? Black,
1,000
chips. No, I don't want to know. Okay, now income stocks are stocks that we buy mostly for the dividend. Utilities are the best choice example. Are utilities growing really fast, like Farsbook and Titter? SDG&E, are they growing really fast? No. Are they going to go anywhere? No. Are people going to want to take cold showers in the dark? Hell no. So they pay out a lot of their income in dividends. A lot of their earnings, they pay out in dividends. Banks. Banks for years were great income stocks. Then they started getting really exciting. And that's when they crashed the world, when they got into the option arms and a lot of crap. Banks are getting boring again. Banks are becoming really good income stocks again. Now, on the other, and I should use this again, but you really, here are the stars. These are the ones you hear about in the news. These are the ones that are always on the cover of GQ and Vanity Unfair. And they've got beautiful hair and great pecs and great teeth. Companies that are growing at 15, 20% or higher. Now, it doesn't sound like a lot, but if you're growing at 20% in 3 years, you're going to be twice the size you are now. So it's a huge growth. They don't pay dividends. Why? They need the money to reinvest in the business. So, for example, Intel, HP, wait a minute. Are Intel, HP, and Microsoft, are they growth stocks anymore? Yes, somewhat. You know, the companies are growing, but not like they were 20 years ago when everybody was buying their first PC. Who are the growth stocks now? Amazon, Apple, Google, Netflix, Facebook, the ones that we hear about all the time in the news. Now, are they good to invest in? Well, maybe yes, but they can burn you. That's why they're called hot stocks. So you have to be careful. They call them traders, speculators, not investors. They will watch the momentum, and you may do well, you may not do so well. Oh, Eric went ahead and did it again. Hey, forget this guy. Yeah, did that in the morning, and I stayed away from it. Okay, where are we? Okay, now, here's a whole other world. Cyclical stocks. Are these companies that are around? No. These are companies that follow the business cycle. People are doing really well. They're getting new jobs. They're getting a raise. What do? They have more money in their pocket. What do? They go out and buy stuff. What do they go buy? Cars. That's what they go buy. It's changing. The younger folks are not buying cars like the previous generation. But I want a new car. I got a raise. I'm doing a good job. I want a new car. What's wrong with the old car? I don't know. I like that new car smell. Right? Good for your liver. Okay. What happens when there's a recession? People are losing their jobs. Do they go out and buy cars? No. Old Bessie's doing just fine. Thank you very much. So companies that make stuff, like automobiles, they're the poster child. They do really, really well when the economy's doing well. They lose tons of money because people just stop. They sit on their hands and stop buying cars. And the same thing is true, though, for any company that makes materials like timber or steel or chemicals. Those companies do really well when the economy's doing well. They do very poorly when the economy's not doing well. Because now everything you buy has a chip in it, so chips they're no longer the archetypal growth stocks, they now have become cyclical. On the other side of this coin are defensive stocks, and these are not defense stocks. We're not talking about people who make bullets. We're talking about food companies, or companies that make diapers, or soap, or companies that make drugs. Do you eat more Cheerios because the economy is doing well? Do you eat fewer Cheerios because the economy is doing well? Do you take more insulin because the economy is doing well or less? No. So these are called defensive stocks. And they actually sometimes do well when the economy hurts because people will move from the growth and the cyclical, the traders, the speculators, people who trade a lot of their stocks. They will trade from the growth stocks, from the cyclical stocks, into the defensive stocks. And in 2000 and 2002, they actually went up because the growth stocks had been where it was at in 96, 97, 98, 99, 2000, and then things changed. And so these guys who had sort of been sitting in the corner not doing much, all of a sudden, hey, Kellogg's, they're going to make food no matter what because people are going to eat it. And now, though, one of the most dangerous, sometimes associated with growth stocks, but not always, are speculative stocks. These are the companies that may explode. Have you heard of Tesla? Or may implode. This guy got bought. But Juno, Bluebird Bio, what do? This guy got bought by another company. I forget who. Gilead? Yeah, Gilead. These are the companies that are working on curing cancer. One of them is going to do it, folks. Maybe two of them. But they're going to cure cancer. And there's various ways to do it. But did we tell you this already? Take out your blood. You get your T cells, the killer T cells, the leukocytes or the lymphocytes. Who's the biology major here? One of those sites. Right? And they genetically alter them to train them to go after the tumor. Because cancer is really smart. Cancer's like, we're part of the body. Don't bother us. You know, don't attack us. The immune system. And so they literally train your immune system to go after the tumor. Put the stuff back in. Start producing more, multiplying, propagating, and the patient has the worst cold they've ever had in their life. The worst. They just feel horrible. They feel like they're going to die. It's a horrible cold. Because the symptoms you get from a cold are not from the virus. They're from your immune system. Your immune system says, I don't care how you feel. I've got to deal with this virus. And so after 2 weeks, the tumor's gone. It's happening, folks. And one of these companies is going to do it. And if you invest in them, you're going to be rich. Or you're going to be crying in your beer because you picked the wrong one. And so what some people will do, these people, you know, very speculative, they're okay going to the gambling table. They'll buy, you know, all three of them or all four of them and figure, okay, one of them is going to work. Now, turnarounds. Turnarounds are a little tricky
We don't talk too much about these companies. These are companies, I often call them goners because they often don't turn around. But these are companies that have fallen on hard times and there's a potential for a rebound. That's your decision. You have to decide. Could this company rebound? After the Great Recession, GM, Ford, Chrysler were all on the ropes. I mean, they were about ready to go under. But if you bought Ford bonds, did we show the Ford stock? Did I show you the Ford stock? Went down to less than $2? Yeah. And then asset plays are companies that are sitting on lots of assets. For example, JCPenney's. We're going to see what happens. JCPenney's is probably going to disappear. But they have assets. They have one of those insurance companies that sells the kids. They sell insurance for babies. Totally useless. But they make a lot of money doing it. Okay, and then penny stocks. Stay away. These are companies that are not real companies. So, what kind of stock type is? So now you, as an analyst, as an investor, as a potential investor and a potential stock analyst, can say, what? Now, notice some of them are going to fit in more than one category, and some of them don't fit in any category. What is Johnson & Johnson? What do they make? Q-tips. Band-Aids, all kinds of medical products. So what are they? Defensive. They're also a blue chip. They've been around for over 130 years or something like that. What about ExxonMobil? They're a blue chip, and because they make stuff, in this case oil, they're cyclical. And they do really... Also, but oil is its own cycle, too. Sometimes there's a whole lot of oil, the price plummets. And then all of a sudden, there's not as much oil, and the price skyrockets. And that's why people say, why is oil so volatile? It's because of you. You're buying it, right? You're paying it. And so they're producing as much as they can until the price goes down. Then they go, oh, they have too much. And then the price falls. And don't you want to have really cheap oil? Don't you really want to have really cheap oil? You're an American. And it is your God-given right to use as much oil as you can. You shouldn't have to worry about the price. How much is a gallon of gas in Europe? Like $10. Yeah, it depends on where you go. $7, $8, $9, $10. How much is a gallon of gas? They do liters, by the way, but we'll just say. How much is a gallon of gas in Saudi Arabia?
15 cents.
They raised it like 50 cents now. Yeah, but for the while there was like a quarter, 25 cents. Yeah. Okay, what about Google? Yeah, growth. Are they a blue chip now? Well, ExxonMobil, Johnson, like, hey, you guys only been around 15 years. But they're bigger. Google's bigger than Johnson & Johnson. Bigger than McDonald's. Bigger than Coca-Cola. So I guess they're blue chip. How about SDG&E? Utility. Right? You've heard of SDG&E, right? That's where you get your gas and your electricity. Right. So are they a blue chip? I don't know. They're not really that big. We can look at their market capitalization. But they're a defensive stock, right? They're an income stock. They're fairly, you can use defensive, but they're income. Utilities are fairly income, but they're also fairly defensive because people don't want to take cold showers in the dark. General Mills, what do they make? Cheerios, Wheaties. So what, are they a blue chip? They've been around a long time. In fact, I think they took them out, but they were in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. And also, because they make food? Is this that hard? No, once you do it a few times, you got to make a few mistakes, or maybe not. Sometimes there's a difference of opinion. Some people say, oh, that's a growth stock. No, it's become a cyclical. How about International Paper?
Cyclical.
What do? They make paper, and when you make paper, you also make... wood products, building products. They're byproducts of one another. You make timber. I mean, you don't make timber. You grow timber, and you turn it into wood products, and you make paper at the same time. So?
Cyclical.
Right. They're also blue chip. They used to be in the Dow. I don't think they are anymore. How about Union Pacific Railroad? A railroad company. You don't have to be right. Turnaround. No, they're doing fine. Don't worry. They're not going anywhere. I know. We're so divorced from the rail world because we don't ride on trains anymore. We get on a plane, go someplace. But all the stuff that you buy, Most of it, yeah, that's right. Well, their income too, they pay a pretty good, but they're mostly a cyclical stock. Oh, by the way, they're also a blue chip, and what are the railroads sitting on that was given to them 160, 180 years ago? Land. They've got tons of land. They're real estate companies. And so they've got, because it was given to them, you know, 150 years ago, when they, 160, 170 years ago. How about General Motors? Well, they used to be. Then they were a goner, turn around. And now they kind of are, again. You know, well, do you think they've turned around? The car industry is so difficult, folks. It's such a hard industry. But it looks like General Motors has come around, and they're going to stick around. They're doing very well in China, believe it or not. They sell more Buicks in China than they sell here. Yeah, they're doing actually very well. And it's run by a woman, by the way. You ladies, take a look at Miss Barra, Mary Barra. She's pretty sharp. She's no dummy. How about Flim Flam Incorporated? Yeah, they make Blue Steam. Have you heard of Blue Steam? It's going to be the next big thing. They didn't do well. Their left-handed smoke shifter didn't work out too well. But they're going to make Blue Steam, and you're going to want to buy it. And so, what is it? It's Blue Steam, not Pink Steam. That didn't work out too well. Yeah, it cures hoarseness. No, they're scams. What about General Dynamics? What do they make? Military, right. They make bullets and tanks and jet fighters and submarines. And that they own NASCO, by the way. Have you noticed that NASCO keeps getting smaller? If you go by Harbor Drive, you never go by Harbor Drive. If you go by Harbor Drive, right near downtown, you'll see NASCO, which is a big plant. And the NASCO keeps getting smaller, and the signs for General Dynamics keep getting larger. Eventually, NASCO will be gone. Where do you put a company that makes defense products? They are cyclical, but not they don't go with the economy. They have their own geopolitical cycle, depending on how many wars are going on and how many sabers are being rattled. So they have that's an example of a company that doesn't really fit. Well, it's a blue chip also. It's a very big company, but it doesn't really fit in any of these guys. Cool. So do you think you could do that? Do you think you can now look at a company and say, that's a cyclical company. That's a growth company. And realizing that some people might disagree with you. Okay, cool. That's enough of that. All right, we discussed the New York Stock Exchange. Did we? I don't remember. The New York Stock Exchange, what is often called Wall Street, because it's on Wall Street, and it was back in 1792. It was created when there really was a wall that was the edge of the city on Manhattan. And now their counterpart, their big competitor, is the NASDAQ. The American Stock Exchange was the kid brother for decades, but now it's been bought, subsumed into the New York Stock Exchange. So here are the two biggies. In the United States, it's New York Stock Exchange, NASDAQ, and then there are these places that are often called the over-the-counter markets, the bulletin boards, the pink sheets. This is where the penny stocks live. You're not going to see a penny stock on the New York Stock Exchange or NASDAQ. They won't let it. They'll kick it out. In fact, just recently, the New York Stock Exchange said, you ever hear of Wrong Aid? I'm sorry. Rite Aid. You know, I'll tell you, folks, the Rite Aid in Ocean Beach on a Saturday night is the place to be. If you like people watching, you're going to see the really most bizarre assortment of people. So go in there, have a Thrifty's ice cream, and just look around and go, oh my God, we're different. And so their price went down to like 60 cents, 50 cents. And the New York Stock Exchange said, oh, no, you can't stick around here. So what they did is they took everybody who had a share, I think 20 shares. If you had 20 shares, they took them away and gave you one. Now remember the stock split we talked about real quickly? If you have one share, and now you have two, the price goes down in half. Well, they took away 20 of your shares, gave you one, so the price went up 20-fold, but not for long. I have a friend who worked for Rite Aid for several years. He was a high-level executive, and he said, I don't know how the hell we're still in business. So we'll see. Do you want to take a look at Rite Aid?
as opposed to CVS and Walgreens. Here, let's take a real quick look. This is here's a goner. Here, I think it's a goner. I don't know. We'll see. They've been a goner for 20 years. It's called RAD, Rite Aid Corporation. Okay, look at the price. This is, so yeah. But just a little while ago, because it went 20 to 1, it was down around 50 cents, 47 cents. Look at their price. How do they stay in business? I don't know. But no dividend. So what's the market cap? It's still pretty, you know, mid-sized company. Now let's compare them to CVS and Walgreens. Walgreen Boots or something like that. Right? $69 billion. But look, they're losing money, but at least they pay you some dividends. And then here's Walgreen Boots. $48 billion. They're actually making money, and they're paying you almost 3%. So what do you think the future for Rite Aid is? I don't know. Maybe, yeah. I don't know that they would let them, though. That would be like a... And they'd probably say, we don't really want them. Because they'd have to close so many stores.
They had a plan already to merge with another company.
Who?
Shareholders. I don't remember which one.
CVS or Walgreens?
Don't remember. But I got the... You know how you get the voting?
Yeah. You got it in the mail. Okay. Well, the problem with CVS or Walgreens buying Rite Aid is that they have so many stores right next to one another, right? Right. And plus they had to give up all those locations. So are they really getting anything? I don't know. I don't know that much about the industry. Okay, and we discussed the Dow Jones Industrial Average is the 30 blue chip companies. And it's the best known, but it's not very good. I don't like it. They talk about the Dow every single day. A better one is the Standard & Poor's 500. Standard & Poor's 500 is the largest 500 companies traditionally based in the United States. That's a better one because this guy is only 30 companies. For example, today, 3M, which is one of the Dow companies, took a dump. They didn't have good earnings. The earnings were bad. So that hurt the Dow. One company can hurt the list of 30 companies. Whereas if one company does badly in the S&P 500, it's not as big a deal. Although that has its problems. We talked about that in 123 today. Then the other one you will hear in the news is the NASDAQ. And the NASDAQ mostly has technology companies, but not always. Apple, Microsoft, Intel, Qualcomm, Facebook, Google, Amazon, they're all on the NASDAQ. And why is that? Well, let's do a little history. When these companies started, many of them started in the 1970s, 80s, 90s, the NASDAQ was the place to go when you were small. The New York Stock Exchange was where you would go once you became big. And so the New York Stock Exchange was just waiting for Microsoft and Intel to move on over to the New York Stock Exchange. And they said, no, thank you. We're very happy here. So you heard two words at the top, the 23rd floor or something like that, in the boardroom. The first one was O. And so now you have that huge duopoly, NASDAQ and New York Stock Exchange. New York Stock Exchange is still bigger, still much bigger than NASDAQ. Okay, so that's the technology index. The next ones are not as well known, but they're important because we're going to get to mutual funds maybe today, start mutual funds today, and also next week, certainly. And those are the, you know, I like the old name so much better. Wilshire 5000. Isn't that a better name? It's now called the Dow Jones U.S. Total Stock Market Index. It was 5,000 stocks. So you have the big companies, the papa bears, the medium size, the mama bears, and then the baby bears. So that's a better, in my humble opinion, of the entire economy. Because it shows you how the big companies are doing, medium, and the small companies. And you will see mutual funds that are tied to this. The Russell 2000 is meant to be just small and medium-sized companies. And many people in the industry will look to the Russell to see the future of the economy. Because, in general, when the economy is coming out of a recession, small companies rock. They do really, really well. Medium-sized companies, they can more nimbly adapt to changes. When the economy goes into recession, small and medium-sized companies get hammered. So it's more like a canary in the coal mine. And so if they start doing badly, people go, it's not going right. Now, there are two indices that are meant to measure what's going on in the global economy, global stock market, and then what is called international or foreign, sometimes called foreign. Because here's the tricky part. Domestic, these are domestic, by the way. These are domestic. And so is the top one up there, the top two. Domestic means we are based in the United States. Foreign, I mean, global is easier. Global is everybody, todo el mundo. And then international or foreign means everybody outside the United States. And this was important about 20, 30 years ago or so, starting in the 1980s. Because before that, most people in the United States would not invest outside the United States. I mean, some did, but most didn't. Stay away. That's where the risk was. But then people wanted to, they were saying, hey, you know, Japan's doing okay until it crashed. Other companies are doing okay. Other countries are doing okay. Okay. So people started buying international stocks, international funds. And so they created the EFA, and that's how you pronounce it, EFA, Europe, Australia, and the Far East. And the World Fund, it's Morgan Stanley Capital International, I don't have to remember that, just see MSCI. And the World Index to show how everybody, including the United States, were doing. They didn't ask me. They changed the names. They didn't change the names. What they did is these guys were just the developed world. This was United States, Canada, Western Europe, South Africa a little bit, Japan, Australia, Hong Kong, Singapore. And then this guy was the same, but without the United States. But now we got China, India, Peru, Mexico, Brazil, Eastern Europe doing well. Africa's booming, by the way. It's scary still, but it's booming. Or at least it was. And so instead of just changing the world index in the EFA, they created two new indices. And this is what you're going to see. The MSCI, Morgan Stanley Capital International, All Country World Index, and the MSCI, All Country World Index, ex-USA. Now, don't they tell you everything that's going on? But I don't make as much money as they make. We don't care what you think, Mayano. But if it were me, I just want to change the world index, because that's a good name, world index, and maybe change the name to international, I don't know, outside the United States. But anyway, these are going to be revisited when we get to mutual funds, because there are people who say, oh, you should just buy the companies in these indices. That's all you should do. You shouldn't do any kind of research. Anything that we're doing in this class, where we're deciding market capitalization, earnings per share, dividends, no, don't do it. Just buy the stocks in the index. And there's a couple reasons why that we'll come back to later on. Okay, bull market, bear market. We did the show me the numbers. And then at the end, let's not do that. Okay, we talked. We'll come back to asset allocation when we get to chapter 13. I'll show you stocks and bonds in retirement, and then stocks and bonds in a balanced fund, and then at the end we'll do in retirement. But this is deja vu for some of you. This was 30, 40, 50 years ago. Everything's changing. People are living longer. But they said, you know what, you should really subtract your age. Something you're 20 years old. You should have 80% in stocks, 20% in bonds. Say you were 40 years old, you should have 60% in stocks, 40% in bonds. See what's happening? As you get older, you're reducing your exposure to stocks. I think this is poppycock. You like that word, poppycock? Poppycock. Because you young folks are going to be living into your 80s, 90s, 100s easily. You need growth. You don't have to worry about bonds. And so you'll see the different strategies changing at the 110, 120. So if it's 120, somebody in their 20s shouldn't have any bonds. You see that? You see what they're doing? They're saying, okay, yeah, people are living longer. But I think you should buy high-quality stocks. Once you're near retirement, okay, start buying bonds. But there's a caveat. If you're the kind of investor who's frightened of stocks, you want to eat well, you want to sleep well, you don't worry about eating well, then this is obviously not true. You should have some bonds. But I don't think so. But that's me. Okay, and of course, you want to rebalance. If you use this technique, you want to rebalance. And this is actually pretty smart. This is not too bad. Let's say you want 60% stocks, 40% bonds. Well, some years stocks are going to do really well. Bonds might not do so well, or vice versa. So you might be now at 70% stocks, 30% bonds. You're out of balance. What do? Sell some stocks, buy some bonds to get you back in balance. And this is actually not too smart. Not too bad, because it forces you to do the right thing. You've made some profits. As they say, take some profits off the table. You gambling phrase. You know, you made some money at the gambling table. Take some of it away, put it in your pocket. I like that idea. Maybe not. You getting bored? All right, let's keep going. I'm going to ask you one question about options, futures, shorting, margining, buying on margin. Just stay away from these things. In the 123 class, we discuss these at the end of the semester. We're about there right now. After next week, we get to these. But they're very, very dangerous. You can make a ton of money, and you're going to see advertisements. I made 100% in 3 days with my options. And the next day, lost all of it. And that's what happens with these things. It's the idea of, we teach you about syphilis, not so you'll go get syphilis. So all you need to know that these things are dangerous, options, futures, margin accounts, selling short, stay away from them. That's all you need to know. Is that good enough? All right, now, do you listen to the media? Do you watch television? It's not good for your health, folks. It's already showing that television is not good for your health. And it's definitely not good for your financial health. Oh, the market's falling, the market's crashing, what do you do? Turn the radio off. Turn the television off, get away from the screen. Because most of these things are just horrible. You'll see an advertisement. Not advertisement. You'll see an article. Could Apple raise 20%? Rise 20%? Could Apple rise 20%? Yes. Could Google fall 20%? Yes. People sometimes ask me, because they think I know what I'm doing, right? They say, well, what's the market going to do? I say, it'll go up and down. And they go, well, I knew that. So what'd you ask me for? Or they'll say, is there going to be a crash? I say, oh, yeah. Oh, what do we do? What do we do? Nothing. Well, you said there's going to be a crash. I say, yeah, I know there's going to be a crash. I don't know when it's going to happen, but I know it's going to happen. So waiting for it to happen, it's too late. You know, you might not happen for another 5 years, 10 years, whatever. So just live with it. Okay. Oh, by the way, did I tell you about Business 123, Introduction to Investments? I think I did. It's a great class, folks. And you can take it online. You don't get college credit. All the presentations, handouts, materials, just like this class. Everything's online. But here, this is the book you want to read. You guys like books? Yeah? You don't like books that much? No. Okay, good. Well, this is the book you want to read. This guy, Peter Lynch, was awesome. He ran the Fidelity Magellan Fund for 12 years, 1977 to 1989, 29% a year. 29% a year. People just, where is this guy coming from? And he wrote this book, and everyone thought, oh, he's going to talk about how wonderful he is. No, not at all. He's very down to earth, got a great sense of humor, and he explains why you really want to own stocks and how you should go about buying stocks. And then he wrote it again, got a little bit more detailed in another book, but don't read this one first. And then the other guy, Burton Malkiel, wrote a very funny book and fun, Random Walk Down Wall Street. So either one of these books is the first book you want to read. Eventually, you want to read Intelligent Investor. Eventually. Don't be at the first book. And then go to the company itself. You like Coca-Cola? Go on their website. You'll see Investor Relations. A link will say Investors, something like that. You can download their annual report. What's the annual report? Or the quarterly report. What's the quarterly report? What was that? You're welcome. I wait all semester. I wait all semester longer. One little Latina, she said, that you say a word the whole semester long. She's sitting right there. She goes, that was so wrong. Okay, sorry. Okay, so here we are. We're going to go run. We're not going to do the All Stars of Investing, but to read through it. This is a great quote. Be fearful when others are greedy. Be greedy when others are fearful. He's just restating what his boss, what his teacher said. Buy when most people, including experts, are overly pessimistic, and sell when they are actively optimistic. And then John Templeton, bear markets are born of pessimism, grow in skepticism, mature in optimism, and die on euphoria. The time of maximum pessimism is the best time to buy. But is it easy to buy when everybody else is running for cover? No. So he says, to buy when others are despondently selling and sell when others are avidly buying requires the greatest fortitude and pays the greatest rewards. Now, did Sir John Templeton listen to his own advice? Oh, yes, he did. Oh, yes, he did. December 1941, you history buffs. December 1941.
Pearl Harbor.
Right, Pearl Harbor. The United States is dragged into World War II. We were trying to get into it, but the public was not too happy about it because we got dragged into World War I, and it was a bad mistake. Okay, Pearl Harbor. The one-third of the Pacific Fleet is destroyed in one morning. What does Yobar do? He calls up his broker and says, I want you to buy every bankrupt company on the New York Stock Exchange. 4 years later, the war is over, and Sir John Templeton, pretty good for a kid from Tennessee, right? Sir John Templeton was a very wealthy man. Would you have that? I know, Nicole. Neither would I. I didn't do it. Okay, and then famous men. Okay, we'll get rid of it. Okay, so now. Oh, anybody interested in a career in stocks? Yeah? I'll tell you, look, this is the best time to get involved in the industry. There's a whole lot of old folks like me getting ready to retire or kicking the bucket, right? And so we need you, literally. The industry knows that. They're trying to make it easier for you. It's a little tough to get in the industry at first. You have to take the Series 7. And before you do that, you have to be sponsored by a brokerage firm. And brokerage firms are a little queasy about hiring somebody because it doesn't matter what school you're from. The dirty little secret in our industry is you could have a degree from the most prestigious school around and you might not be a good representative. You might be just talk above people's heads and look down upon them or whatever. You have to be able to deal with people. You got to learn your products. You got to learn the investments and like and understand what's going on, talk the language, and that's the easy part. The hard part is how do you deal with people, even the jerks, right? But they need more women. They want more women. They want more minorities. They want more bilingual. They want ex-military. They love ex-military. Why? Because it's a very structured environment. And so the Series 7 is a very tough test, so much so that they now have a pre-test. If you take the pre-test, you don't have to be sponsored. I think it's like $80, $70. You take the pre-test, you're going to get a job because then they'll know, oh, okay, they'll pass the Series 7. Series 7 is tough. 3 hours in the morning, hour for lunch, 3 hours in the afternoon. It's a grueling test. But once you've done it, you're a stockbroker. You're a registered representative. All you got to do from then on is take some continuing education exams every couple of years, and they're very easy. Like, are you still alive? Okay, good. The 66 is pretty easy. So it's an hour. It takes a couple of weeks. But figure, if you're going to take the Series 7, it's 2 months of study, 1 to 2 hours a day. You've got to do it over and over and over again. And take Business 123, certainly, because that's the base. Business 123 is basically the basic material in Series 7. But then they ask you a whole bunch of other stuff that you never need, but you got to know to take the Series 7. But there's a future for you, because here's what's happening. This old folks now, we have what's called our book, our client list. They call it the book. How big is your book? Oh, 20 million, 100 million. And they want to sell it. It has value because it's generating income. So basically, they're going to sell you their client list. And you're going to pay them a certain amount of money over, you know, it's negotiable, and they can use it for retirement or whatever. In the meantime, you're going to be building your own clientele because you have to do that. And it's a great, I like it. Did I mention that the salaries are higher than the national average? Yeah, I mentioned that, didn't I? I did. Yeah. And I'll tell you, stockbroker is easy. You got to deal with the jerks, right? But it's, keep your clients happy. Take them to, I'll never forget this guy. I'll never forget. I'll tell you later when we get to where it was. But he said, oh, what are you talking about? Send them a bottle of wine on their birthday. Take them to steakhouse. Take them golfing. They'll love you. He's selling them really horrible things, right? I was like, yeah. Okay, so who wants to swap some more stories? Anybody have some stories out there they want to tell? Here's see, usually after you sell your losers, you forget about them. So I put them up here just to show you, just to remind myself how stupid I was. Any volunteers?
Well, I bought right when it dipped to like 60 cents. I only made like a penny profit like a year.
Oh, for what?
Rite Aid.
Oh, Rite Aid. Oh, but you gave up?
Yes.
You sold it? After they decided on the reverse split?
Yeah.
That's an active, that's the Hail Mary pass. Well,
I sold after I read up on it again. It was Albertson's wide merger.
That makes sense. Albertson's would make sense for them to buy it. It wouldn't make sense for CVS or Walgreens, because then they have to close a whole bunch of stores. So what kind of value would you get out of that? Just the name, not much, but who wants the name? Anybody else? Any horror stories? Yeah. Oh.
But I didn't buy when it was like rallying. I was in it before, but then I was like trading it. I wasn't investing it. So
You lost?
I made like 2,000 and I lost it.
I lost it all. See, that's my son. My son came up to me because I do his taxes. But he didn't want to tell us. He didn't want to tell my wife and I. He said, I want to do my taxes. Go, okay, that's good. I got TurboTax off. But I have some transactions to report. Okay, well, what the hell are you? Cryptocurrencies. Okay, fine. And he had taken $1,000. Did I tell you this already? He took $1,000, turned it into $15,000. This is right when it was starting to crash. It was the year before. And we said, hey, both of us at different times, because I didn't want to tell him what to do. I don't want to tell you what to do. My mother, I don't want to tell you what to do, but... So, well, how about this? You know, like gambling, you took $1,000, turned it into $5,000, take the $1,000 off the table, put it in your pocket. And then the rest is all gravy. You could lose it all. And so we know he did that. After that, we don't know. We don't ask. We don't want to know. Because he knows I can't stand this stuff. He knows that I hate cryptocurrency. Anybody else?
HCLP.
Which one?
HCLP.
H?
Yeah, HCLP.
And who are they?
They make fracking.
Fracking?
Yeah.
Sand?
Yeah, they use the abrasive used for fracking.
Oh, they make the materials that go into fracking. How did it do?
It dipped into summer along with the market, and then it hasn't recovered yet.
HCL?
The dividend's like 40% now because of this.
Look at the PE ratio. Are investors excited about HCLP?
Not even a little.
Oh, they cut the dividend.
Yeah, but if you check it, they're still paying out 40%.
They're still paying the dividend?
Yeah.
How come they're putting not applicable here?
I don't know.
They haven't cut it? They're still paying that dividend.
Maybe they're paying one more, then they're going to cut it out.
They're going to cut it, probably, yeah. So what's the market cap?
Micro.
Yeah, not quite micro, but pretty far down. And look, it fell 7% today. Yeah, I don't know. You got out.
No,
you're still in there.
I'm going to get my dividend and then I'm going to get out.
You're going to get your dividend and then run. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Okay. So that's it. No, I'll tell you, any interested in any of these? Can you hear my horror stories? No?
Cardio.
Oh, man. This is one of those biotech companies that's going to change the world. And they're here, based in San Diego. So I found out about them. I went to their annual meetings. I read everything. They actually hired me. I'm serious. I was reading their annual report and there were dozens of mistakes in it. You know, I'm a teacher, so I started marking them up and I showed it to the one guy and he said, take it to this woman. She's the marketing director. And I said, look, you made all kinds of mistakes. And she said, can we send you the report and proofread it? I said, yeah. And they paid me to do it. Again, it was like $75. I charged him, I said, $75. Like an hour and a half. I'll charge you $50 an hour. And and they were going great guns.
What did they do? In the 1960s, NASA developed this technology. You know the electrical encephalogram to measure the brain activity, electrical brain activity? The electrocardiogram to measure the heart's activity? Well, in the 1960s, NASA developed an electrosomethingogram that could measure the heart flow. The flow, not the active, not the pumping, not the boom, ba boom, ba boom, ba boom, but the flow through the heart, which is a very important thing to do, right? Now, if the doctor thinks you have a serious illness, heart illness, they do what's called pulmonary arterial catheterization. They stick a television down into your heart. It's very dangerous. People die from the PAC. So this worked for, in the 1960s, it worked for astronauts. But astronauts are in tip-top physical conditioning. They have to be. They work out 2 hours a day. And so it worked great for them, but it did not work at all for the general population. Well, 30 years later, Cardiodynamics, based here in San Diego, figured out how to get it to work. And they started using it. And cardiologists started using it. And insurance companies and Medicare were paying for it. So great. The future looks great. And I'm buying Cardiodynamics. I'm buying more. I'm buying more. I get some other people to buy it. And it's doing really well. And then Medicare says, we're not going to pay for the procedure anymore. I think it was like $200 or something like that. It was not a big a deal, but you walked into a cardiologist and they did this. And as soon as Medicare said they weren't going to do it, the insurance companies weren't going to do it. Why did Medicare say they weren't going to do it anymore? It turns out there's a whole lot of people, I might be one of them, once we reach our 50s and 60s, our hearts are not as good as we think we are. Even though we get on the treadmill, I ride bikes, our hearts are really not as good as we think they are. And so people were getting the electro-something-gram, and we're going to do the triple bypass surgery next Tuesday. Can you get off next Tuesday? So all of a sudden, a $200 procedure became a $35,000 procedure. And so Medicare said, you know, this is costing us too much money. So they stopped it. And then Cardiodynamics, boom. And the insurance company, boom. And then they eventually got bought up. So was it any fault of the company? No. And that's the problem with small companies. They can make you rich or really, really sad. Really, Cenar. Cenar is the one that broke my heart. And you read Peter Lynch. Read One Up on Wall Street. He'll tell you, buy what you know. Buy what you know. You walk in Nike shoes. Maybe Nike's a good investment. You drive Toyotas. Maybe Toyotas are a good investment. So for 20 years, Sesame Street was the most popular kid show on television. And then along comes Arthur. Anybody still watch Arthur with their kids? No? Well, I'm watching Arthur with my son. He was in third grade, target market, and Arthur blew away Sesame Street. Arthur was now the most popular kid show on PBS. And they also made Caillou and Lindsay's House, and they made it, this is in the 1990s, and they had a little agreement with a small Japanese electronics firm called Sony. You ever hear of them? To distribute their materials worldwide, and it's based in Montreal, and I'm reading about, this looks really good, so I'm buying Cenar, and I'm buying more, and I'm getting people to buy it. And then, one Sunday afternoon, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, that's Canada's FBI, right? They still call them the Mounted, they don't ride horses. But they swooped in Cenar's offices in Montreal, grabbed all these records. What was Cenar doing? Well, Canada is a little sensitive, you know. They're overshadowed by the United States, so they're very sensitive. If you hire Canadian actors, Canadian musicians, Canadian voiceover artists, and graphics artists, and the like, they'll give you tax breaks. But where do most of the people come from? The United States. So Cenar was lying about who their employees were. Okay, so pay a fine, get over with it, you know, get it over with. Then a few weeks later, it was determined that $130 million, Canadian, had been spirited away from Cenar and sent to Barbados or
bar, one of those places begins with the letter B in the Caribbean, and Cena. And then another company bought the product. So now, see, that's the thing. The company dies, the product lives on. You know, so Arthur's still around, right? You guys have kids? Arthur's still around? Yeah, it's a great show, too. Okay, it's a great show for kids. So the bottom line, stocks are the best long-term financial investment available. Lead the stock picking to the pros, dear students, because it'll make you sad. In other words, find a good stock mutual fund, which is our next chapter, mutual funds. And as do I sound bullish? Do I sound like I'm into stocks? I am. I am heavily invested in stocks, more than I should be at my age, old. But I always kept my individual stock picks less than 1% of our total portfolio. I used to call it my Vegas fund. It lived down to its name, yes. Because I would buy the, you know, the small companies that could turn into big companies that turned into poop. That actually, and every one of them, through no fault of its own. I guess Dinar has a big reason. Everybody got this? Okay. Guillermo, did you get one?
Yeah.
Okay. Because are we going to buy our own individual bonds? Some of you might, but most people know. Are we going to buy our own individual stocks? Maybe, like Carlos does. But keep the bulk, in my humble opinion, of your financial investments in a mutual fund. I believe it is simply unrealistic to think that I can do better than professionals armed with an entire global research organization at your disposal. Okay, so that was stocks. So do go review. You're all studying, right? Lie to me. Yes, thank you so much. Thank you so much. I love when students go, I know, but I come to class. Either your grade's not very good. I said, well, you know, you have to study. I know, but I come to class. Isn't that good enough? No. Protected mode. Mutual funds. There's an industry saying, mutual funds will bore you to wealth. Are you looking to be bored to wealth? I'll tell you, folks. They've been very, very good to me. The trick is, the hardest part about mutual funds is choosing the right which ones. There are just, as we'll see, there are thousands of these things. Oh, another name is investments for the masses. But the best name, in my humble opinion, is investment company. That's the legal name, by the way. Investment company. Mutual fund is the popular name. But if you go in the law, it's called investment company. What is a mutual fund? An investment chosen by people who pool their money to buy stocks, bonds, and other financial investments. As we said, the legal term. You get two wonderful things. Now, if I called you up at 2 o'clock in the morning and said, why are the two big reasons we own mutual funds? You should be able to go, professional money management and diversification. Okay? Because, again, you're going to be the financial expert for your friends and family. And they don't understand it. They don't understand what's going on. They see these things that they're supposed to pick in their 401k, but they don't really know what they are. And so you're going to explain to them, oh, you don't understand. You're investing through intermediaries. Somebody's making the decisions on your behalf, and you get instant diversification. So you're not, all your eggs are not in one basket. There are about 12,000 of these damn things. Now, wait a minute. You go into a grocery store. Are there 12,000 different breakfast cereals? Seems like it, doesn't it? No. Are there 12,000 different cars out there? No. It seems like it. Yeah, it seems like it. But no, there's really not. There's a couple, few dozen. But there are 12. Why? Well, we're going to see why. Plus, these things are very profitable for the mutual fund companies. And as we said, you are probably going to have these things shoved in your lap. And now they don't even give you the brochures anyway. They go online. And you're going to choose these for your 401ks, 403bs, or maybe your Roth IRA or traditional IRA. Some employer-sponsored plans allow you to buy and sell your own stocks. Most do not. And there's a good reason for that, because most people will screw up royally. So here's my graph. I made this. Aren't you proud of me? From chapter 11, you remember it? Here we are. We're the little people, and more of them are women, because it turns out women are better investors. And we give our $50, $100 a month through our paycheck, checking account, to the people in the top hats. And luckily, more and more of them are women, because women make it better investors. It's already been shown statistically. I know, guys. Be kind to the women. Remember, the future is female. Okay. Except they got a gay guy running for president. Figure that out. You been following this guy? I can't even say his name. Buttigieg? 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 Buttigieg. Have you looked? Guys! You don't pay attention. You're too broke to pay attention, right? I can't. You know, I never thought I'd live to see a day. A person of color. We had a person of color. We're going to have a woman eventually, but now we have a homosexual. He knows seven or eight different languages. He was a captain or a lieutenant in the Afghanistan War. He's a Rhodes Scholar, Harvard educated. Mayor of South Bend, Indiana, and he's married to another guy, and he's running for president. What? First man, but not a first woman. Well, yeah. Well, Kamala Harris is running, and who knows? And so forth. But you guys have grown up in a much different time. But in 1966, we had the first gay homosexual protest. The people wore bags over their heads. That's how frightened they were. They were protesting for gay rights, had bags over their heads. And now we have a guy who's unafraid. Anyway, there was that. Okay, so now, so you're going to be one of these people. Who knows? Maybe some of you are going to be one of these people. But what does it take to be one of these people? Guts. You got to have guts, too. But you got to go to Stanford, Harvard, Yale, Skull and Bones, CrossFit. Don't tell them you went to Southwestern. Okay, they won't like that. Okay, because these people make a lot of money. And they create a pool of money that looks like a potato. And there are billions of dollars in these pools. And so they buy not just 10 stocks or 20 stocks like we did in the one class. They buy 100 or 200 stocks. So if one company does RAD, does Rite Aid, you don't lose that much, right? You lose a little bit. If you have 10 stocks and one of them is Rite Aid, you're going to lose a lot. If they buy bonds, they don't buy 10, they buy 100 or 300 or whatever. That's a bond mutual fund. If they buy the short-term cash instruments, they're not savings accounts. They're like savings accounts. It's called a money market mutual fund, but usually we don't hear people say money market mutual fund. It's just people hear people say money market. And this, you're not going to lose money here, but you're not going to make a lot of money here. But in both of these cases, you can lose. You will lose, that's for sure. We already saw that. And bonds, you're going to lose sometimes a little bit. But now we begin to see the beginning of the explosion of different funds, and that's a balanced mutual fund, stocks and bonds. Cool. So why do we buy mutual funds? Why do we buy mutual funds? And the PETA factor. The PETA factor with mutual funds is very low. What does PETA stand for? Pain in the... Yeah, right. What, I wish I would have come up with that. I got that from the wealthy barber, by the way. Once you've purchased your mutual funds, once you've decided which mutual fund or mutual funds, and when you're starting out, you only need one, but after a while, you might want to diversify within mutual funds, you have nothing for you to do. Just make sure $100 comes out of your paycheck or comes out of your checking account, and they do all the rest. Who are the funds managers? Managers change often. You have to be careful. And the diversification is something that is difficult for, not impossible, but difficult for individual investors to obtain on their own. Let's take a look at the mutual fund industry. Now, the ICI, Investment Company Institute, that's their trade group. They are statisticians, and it'll come out within a few weeks. It usually comes out about May, so I don't know. We don't know the data for 2008 yet, But as of 2017, there were almost 12,000 of these things. When the Investment Company Act of 1940 was created, it solidified the industry. Before that, there were mutual funds, but they were in this quasi-governmental state. Some states didn't allow mutual funds. They didn't like what was going on. And the feds were going, what the hell do we do with these things? So the repugnants and the demagogues, they got together in the sandbox and played nicely, and they created the Investment Company Act of 1940. And it has stood the test of time. It has worked very, very well for us as a society. 30 years later, 350, 600, 2,000, 9,000 by the end of the year 2000. So the market went in two directions, up and way up. And so all these companies started coming out with more and more mutual funds because there's money to be made in this industry. So how do you buy them? How do you buy them? Well, there are a couple different ways. If you feel you need investment advice, you can go to a financial representative, a broker, account executive, whatever you want to call us. And the person has to be licensed, and you buy through them. You can go right to the investment company itself. Companies like Fidelity and Vanguard and a bunch of others say, don't bother with the financial representative. Go right to us. And my humble opinion, it doesn't matter which, how you do it. My humble opinion, the best way to do it is just set up $25, $50, $100 a month. And remember we talked about dollar cost averaging? We'll come back and look at it again. It's a horrible name. I wish I could come up with a better name. Sometimes I use stream of investments. Think of it like a keep putting more money away. Well, how do you sell it? Call up your broker. Go to the mutual fund company directly. But in my humble opinion, the best, unless you're saving this money for like a down, for example, a down payment on a house, but many people are saving for retirement, right? Saving for their golden year. And so you're going to be doing this your whole working career because it used to be that your boss did it for you. Your employer set aside money for you. Maybe they took it out of your paycheck, maybe not. And then they paid you a pension, but that's all gone. They're still around for some places. But you're going to do that. As we see in chapter 14, you have the ability to create for yourself a marvelous, a phenomenal, a fantastic pension. So much better than any employer would have given you. But you also have the ability to royally screw up. And this is what people are doing. They're royally screwing up. How do they do that? They don't contribute. I got plenty of time. I don't have to worry about it. When I get to their 50s, oh. Or they do a very bad job of managing their assets. And this is very typical. And you're not going to be one of them. We're going to show you how to do that. Not today, but on Tuesday. I promise. Okay, now, so here's the deal. You're going to put $100 a month away for the next 30, 40 years. Can you do that? And then you're going to take out $2,000 or $3,000 for the rest of your life. A growing stream of income. We already showed you. I already showed you, right? Didn't I show you? I showed you the stock portfolio, right? Let me show you again. Okay. Is that the deal? You with me? Did I mention that there's no guarantees? Did you read the fine print? Okay. But I did show you. I think I'm pretty sure. I'm getting old. I'm getting really, really old. Really, really, really old. Didn't I show you these guys? I think I did. Because I remember you said you're not too excited with the bonds. And I said, let's go right to the stocks. This is the kind of class you are. So here's, be afraid, be very afraid. 30 years of $100 a month, right? And how much do we have? $36,000? $226,000. Not bad. But if you just extend your time horizon, 10 years, time is the exponent. $100 a month for 40 years is $48,000. Would some people pay for a car, right? And you have almost $1,000,000. Yeah? Now, this is what I hope you get in the habit of. You put in $100 a month this year. What do you do next year? 110. The year after that? 120. So two fewer trips to $5. $4. $5. Two fewer trips to Jimba Jamba Jumba Juice for 800 calories of sugar. You put in $140,000 because your investment's growing every year. Again, that sounds like a lot of money, but over 40 years, it's a whole lot less than you're going to spend on cars. That's $4,000 or $5,000 a month for the rest of your life. Is that cool? Yeah, I think so. Okay, now, what else is that? Oh, forget it. We already jumped at the life insurance company. You're never going to trust an insurance company, right? Okay, good. All right, now, not bad. Stretch, everybody stretch, go wake up. I have a few more minutes. I know, this is not the exciting part. Are mutual fund companies non-profit organizations? Hell no. No, they are out to make a buck. Some of them earn their money, I think, very well. Some of them, not so well. But they're all going to charge you. And they're all going to charge you an annual operating expense. This is where people just start to, their eyes glaze over. They know they're being charged. They don't understand, and nor do they really want to. But once it's explained, or once they read it, it's really not that difficult. There are three charges. I'll break it down here. Oh, yeah, 123, I broke it down. There's the management fee. You don't have to remember this. The 12B1 fee. What the hell is that? And then the other, accounting and other expenses. We break it down in 123, but it'll be broken down in the prospectus, the thing that you don't read. You know, we have to, if it's not online, we have to give you a prospectus. Nobody reads it. Now they just say, oh, click here, you know, tap here to say that you've read the prospectus. Because you all read the prospectus, right? It's really useful. I'm telling you, it's useful. If you have insomnia at night, read the prospectus and boom. Right up. It's a joke. But it's true. It's not only a joke. And typically, you'll see anywhere from less than 0.5% up to 2% or more. And what does that mean? Well, say you have $100 in the account. If, you know, typically, let's just use 1% to make life easier. If they have a 1% fee, that means they're taking a buck from you. For every $100 you have in the account, so $100, $1, $1,000, $10. Does that sound like a lot of money? It's actually a lot less than the bank or the life insurance company is charging you. But does the bank or the life insurance company have to show you? No. According to the Investment Company Act of 1940, the mutual fund must show you in the prospectus that you have to be given that nobody reads. So they don't want you to know, really. Just trust them. Okay, so figure, some companies are going to have less than 0.5%, upwards of 2% or more. Now, on top of that, you may be charged a sales load or a sales commission. In the 123 class, we discuss these in detail. You're trying to tell me that we're about ready. Oh, we are about ready to go. Okay. The 5-minute rule. It's 5 minutes. Okay. In the 123 class, we go into these in detail. We will just mention those on the next slide when we come back. Because when we come back, you do not want to miss Tuesday. I am serious. Because you are going to see the full spectrum of risk versus return. And you are going to understand how people emotionally get fall into a trap. And you're not going to do it, and you're going to help your friends and family not do it too. Is that cool? Okay. So we'll see you on Tuesday. Study, study, study. Do your assignments. Turn them in. And we want you to be awesome.